Is there a from California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to Gulfstream waters, this land was made you and me.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to We the People. The People Speak with Reverend Jesse Jackson. I was looking at We the People through by Annie DeFranco, who is the lovely singer that starts off our show every day. Our guest tonight is Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson, Sr., the founder and president of the Rainbow Push Coalition. It is one of America's foremost civil rights, religious, and he is one of America's foremost civil rights, religious, and political leaders. And over the past 40 years, he's played really an incredible role in every movement of empowerment, peace, civil rights, gender equality, economic and social justice. And we'll be back right after these two messages, these public service announcements, to speak to Reverend Jesse Jackson.
PalTalk is the largest and most popular internet chat community in the world, with over 39 million registered users worldwide. There are approximately 4 million active users and between 30 and 70,000 people using PalTalk at any given time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The PalTalk support staff cover 32 basic languages and countless dialects. PalTalk is pretty much comparable to any major city in the world, the virtual online equivalent of a global community.
The Rainbow Push Coalition, founded by the Reverend Jesse Jackson, is an international human rights organization committed to economic development, voters' registration and participation, healthcare, jobs, peace, education, and justice. We ask for your support to enable us to employ the unemployed, educate our children, provide health care, work towards international peace, and provide access to capital, industry, and technology. Join us on the road toward equality and justice. Visit www.rainbowpush.org.
Thank you, Carrie, and welcome back, everybody. We are extremely honored to have you, Reverend Jackson. And thank you. First of all, I'd like to say I hope you recovered from your knee surgery, and a lot of people were very disappointed to. So I hope tonight will make up to all of our virtual audience members that were here waiting in great anticipation.
Well,
we had over 100,000 hits.
I'm honoring the therapy process and still marching.
Good for you, sir. Thank you, and welcome to the People Speak. Tell us about the Rainbow Coalition, the Rainbow Push Coalition. We're very interested.
Progressive, social, political organization, human rights organization, in the legacy of Dr. King. This year, 1966, 40 years ago, he gave me an assignment to head Operation Breadbasket, the economic arm, to leverage our consumer strength and labor strength to open up closed doors locked up by years of racial patterns of exclusion. We've evolved into more direct political activity, more voter registration, raising public policy questions. And, of course, by 1983, Harold Washington became mayor of Chicago. It became a kind of pivotal urban landmark victory and set loose a wave of hope across the nation. I ran for president then in 1984 and 88 and brought in a broad body of people. The reason we call it the Rainbow is because I used to go to conventions. That would be the Native Americans and the progressive fights and the gays and the women and the youth, the blacks, Latinos, all locked out. I said, if we all come together, there are more of us out here than there are on the inside. Why don't we just organize and raise humane issues? Fight for equal high-quality public education for all. Fight for comprehensive health care for everyone. Fight for a budget of peace and education, not a budget of war and incarceration. And, of course, those are progressive lines of thought, and we've continued to grow across these 40 years.
Well, that's incredible. In light of this and the movement that you have going, how did the Rainbow Push Coalition work with the victims of Katrina and the desperate situation that went on there. Was there any way that you were able to help these people to sustain their lives?
I was immediately in Venezuela when the storm and Katrina struck, and within 2 days,
I recall that
I was there on the scene with former Congressman, United States Senator Cleo Fields, and we took 10 missions with 10 buses in and out of there when it was totally dark and FEMA said buses should not come. During that first week when people were in the water, swimming and drowning, the president did not come, no member of his cabinet came. There was no plan for massive rescue, nor massive relocation, nor massive reconstruction. And so it was just total chaos there for a while. But people were dispersed to 48 states. It never was reasonable that the government would not allow the use of unused military bases. Ingalls Air Force Base in Alexandria, Belle Chasse Base. Thousands would have been there living in temporary housing and now doing the work in New Orleans. We didn't see people dispersed across the country. And what I thought happened this last weekend was horrendous, and last month was the election, while Mayor Nagin won the votes of those who did vote, the level of displacement was just horrible. An Iraqi American could vote in Iraq from America, Baghdad, Fallujah, or Afghanistan, but New Orleanians could not vote from wherever they were back to New Orleans. They would not allow satellites outside the state of Louisiana, or really outside of New Orleans. The Secretary of State took the voting list from FEMA, but would not share it with the candidates. So they didn't know who was eligible to vote, and those eligible did not know who was running. And so, in such a state, they suspended the high standard of preclearance in the for the Voting Rights Act. And that is still very offensive. But this Department of Justice saw what Dr. King did in 65 as interposition and nullification. And they resist the Voting Rights Act. They still are fundamental. States' rights, we have a very confederate view of America, and it makes it very difficult. Against those odds, we keep fighting.
Well, you know, I think that's just an amazing... Can I ask you briefly, what are your feelings about the fact that Mayor Nagin won the election in spite of all of the...
I think he learned a lot during this crisis, and he literally grew up on the job. Circumstances kept changing every day. He was already against great odds. You know, they say, well, if he had moved the buses quicker, he had no power outside of New Orleans. There were many places in New Orleans that would not accept people from the inner city. A place called Gretna, right across the bridge, as people tried to leave the water and go across that bridge, they were sent back with gunfire by official police. That's why they couldn't use the unused military bases. They were not allowed to go to many places. And, of course, when they say he should send all the folks to the Superdome, if the level 5 hurricane had hit New Orleans frontally, it would have been a floating graveyard. It would have been underwater, for example. So he was, in some sense, a victim of overwhelming circumstances. And at the end of the day, the kind of cooperation that should have existed between governor and senators and president did not exist, because there was no plan. And I thought even now, that they should have had a czar, someone empowered, to look at the three states. Alabama, Mississippi, and New Orleans got hit. New Orleans got hit the worst because it was underwater. But somebody should have been empowered to have a fair plan for allowing the displaced citizens, white, black, and brown, under their right to return, their right to retraining, and their right to construction contracts, as opposed to Bechtel and Halliburton. Right now, this is a very chaotic process, and right now, they're rather corrupted.
You know, I one of the things that I admired the most about Mary Nagin's situation was that, as anybody would, he became truly humbled, and we saw the human being reacting to this, and that was a very, very powerful statement.
Opposition and the lieutenant governor running for the mayor position. His running was based up on the people can't get back. If they get back, he can't win. If they come back, If they get back, he can't win. If they stay away, he can. Which means he had a vested interest in keeping people out. Lutheran governments should have been fighting for satellites around the country. States were willing to offer satellite access, but the state's writers did not want satellites outside the state. Department of Justice suspended the voting rights standard of preclearance, Section 2, Section 5, and gave it back to the state for the first time since 1965. And they show how abusive states can be. Denial of the list of candidates, denial of satellites, and if you were an Iraqi American, you could be on-site same day registration, 17 forms of ID, and a U.S. soldier would escort you to the polls. But if you were a New Orleanian, if you were a first-time voter, you had to return all the way back just to vote. If you voted before, you had to have two, you had to send for the ballot, have two witnesses, and an authorized affidavit. That's higher than a poll tax. So you had one commitment to democracy in Iraq, and quite another in New Orleans.
Well, you know, Reverend, you know, in light of that, first of all, the legalities, I think, are very questionable on that. And is there anything that will be done to prevent anything in the future from happening like this? I mean, suppressing our vote is already in jeopardy.
Our democracy being eroded. We fund elections essentially stolen.
Exactly.
I mean, Mr. Bush became president by the margin of displaced voters whose right to vote under the Voting Rights Act was not protected. It was even worse in Ohio in 2004. We see a case in Georgia where you can only use public ID to register. So if you go to Georgia Tech, a state school, use your ID to register. If you go to Emory, Clark, or Morehouse, or Spelman, you cannot use it because they're not, quote-unquote, public institutions. In that state, 100 poor counties do not have voter outlets. So you've got to drive to the next county with gas and $4 a gallon. That's like a poll tax. That state approved that plan with those disparities. The Department of Justice approved the state's position. It took a three-judge court to overrule what the Department of Justice had agreed to. So clearly, this Department of Justice is no friend of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, and it says much about why we must struggle not only to get the Voting Rights Act extended, but to get it, in fact, enforced in 2007 and 8.
Well, you know, it is amazing. I would like to ask you about the death of Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, and what do you think this means to America? What does it mean to you, and what does it mean to the world?
Today he is a trophy. He was killed like warriors are killed in war zones. It does not stop the war. It does not bring real comfort to us. It does not bring more security to us. It does not offset how wrong the false premise of the war was. No weapons of mass destruction. No al-Qaeda connection. No imminent threat. We've lost lives and money and honor. And catching a terrorist here or there may give us some temporary satisfaction. This is a false alarm. It does not spell an end to that war.
I absolutely agree with that. Although it is obviously, like you said, a grand trophy for the troops, for the forces, and probably a great morale booster for the United States and for our troops. But the reality is, nothing really has changed. I would like, you know, we have a virtual audience here that is just clamoring to get their questions to you.
Oh,
I'm going to ask you one more question, though, that means something personally to me as a spiritualist. Reverend Jackson, I'd like to know, what do you feel about the most recent politicizing of spirituality? Do you think it's a bad thing, a good thing? And where do you fit in this broad range of typical contradictions that come up into the politics of faith?
Well, you know, the perversion of the Christian faith, as it were, by the politics of culture is not new. Slavery lasts for 246 years on the premise that blacks were the cursed descendants of Ham. This is a biblical justification. Anti-Semitism based upon the notion that Jews killed Jesus and therefore they too committed some amount of guilt of sin and couldn't go to the kingdom. Most lynchings were faith-based. It took place after church on Sunday. It was these pulpits that preached and perpetuated hatred and racism and sexism in the name of God. It's not a new phenomenon. now that they have TV stations and they have more access, they become more prominent trying to use wage issues to incite fear and division. Bush right now is focusing on the constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage, but not the constitutional right to vote. Americans do not have the constitutional right to vote. We only have the states' right to vote. 50 states and 7 unequal elections. We don't have the constitutional right to equal high quality public education for all children. So the issues that involve making us better, that unite us, they ignore those. And so I would think that people of an authentic faith must measure it by how you treat, the Bible says, how you treat the least of these, how you treat the Appalachian coal miners, how you treat the abandoned urban poor, how you treat children, how you treat the young in the dawn of life and the old in the sunset of life, how you treat the poor in the pit of life. They are character measurements that tend to unite us around values that really matter. And so I was hungry and you fed me or you didn't. I was naked and you clothed me or you didn't. I was in prison and you visited me or you didn't. Those are character measures laid out, if you will, by the author of our faith.
Well, I'll tell you, we don't often see, and I admire you greatly for that statement, because we don't often see anymore that kind of ethical and moral base in our spiritual leaders. I don't know if anybody's watched Sunday morning television lately. It's kind of scary, actually. I would like to go to our audience questions right now, Reverend Jackson. Our first audience question is going to come from Swan Songstress. Swan, would you please come to the mic, give us your first name and where you're calling from, and a very brief question, please, because we had a lot of hands up for Reverend Jesse Jackson.
Yes, thank you, Vix. You can call me Swan. I'm here in Santa Cruz, Central California Coast. First, I want to thank you, Reverend Jackson, for being here. You have inspired many of us to be active politically, and I'm happy to have a chance. Thank you for that. Now,
thank you. By the way, the Rainbow Push Convention is in Chicago this week.
Aware of the great disillusionment that many of us have experienced with regard to the voting system because of the last two presidential elections. Many of us have big doubts about the legitimacy of the results. And your Rainbow Coalition pushing the vote. The first part of the question is, how do we get past that when people feel that they, the one area, the vote, where they are able to make a difference, doesn't count? How do we get past that? The second part of the question.
But you know, we've always had the difficulty.
What one?
We've always had difficulty of getting
that we can
access to voting. I mean,
effectively to be.
Hello.
Yeah, it's a one-way conversation, Mr. Jackson. Sorry.
One thing would you suggest that can make a difference other than voting? Thanks again.
Let me suggest. We've always had difficulty in getting access to voting. For so long, only white male landowners could vote. And women couldn't vote. And blacks could not vote. And yet we did not stop fighting for the right. And against the odds, when we got it, some people were bludgeoned at the polls for trying to get the right of that quote-unquote legitimate power. For so long, women didn't have the right to vote, as you know. And so the record goes. And so those who once denied it now try to steal it. If you don't vote, you surrender. And surrender is betrayal of those, in fact, who fought to make it possible. So we fight against the odds. You're not going to run a touchdown without running the risk of being tackled and sometimes clipped from behind. But you just cannot surrender. You cannot give the enemy the benefit of your surrendering in the face of adversity. And it is adverse. But we can win. You know, in the case of Clinton, Bush and Dole got more white votes than Clinton. Clinton got more white, black, and brown, and he won because the people voted, and their vote did count. In 2000, 2004, our votes, in fact, were discounted. But we can't give up and surrender the next election. After all, it's 2006. If we vote our hopes and not our fears in big numbers, we can win.
Thank you very much, Reverend Jackson, and thank you, Swan. Our next question is going to come from Wolf Dancer. Just so you know, Reverend, the people in the virtual auditorium will speak, but they won't be able to hear you until until they relinquish the microphone. The next speaker is Wolf Dancer. Wolf, can you come to the mic and tell us your first name, where you're calling from? And again, I beseech you all to be brief with your questions. Thank you.
Hi, Reverend Jackson. My name is Art. I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I'm a former steel worker. You came to our mill gate. You came to my food bank. And you also came to Dorothy. You slept over my best friend's house, Mike and Mary Wargo. I don't know if you remember that. I want to ask you an important question to union people. Have you been working with unions lately? What do you see down the road for unions? And what do you think about this migrant worker situation? Thank you very much.
Well, first of all, as Americans, we deserve the right to organize, as opposed to these right-to-work laws that are so anti-workers' rights. Corporations have associations, and yet workers cannot have collective bargaining. Dr. King was killed fighting for the garbage workers' right to collective bargaining and dues checkoff. Secondly, our enemy right now for job security is not undocumented workers. We exported steel workers' jobs out of the country. We exported shoe jobs out of the country. We exported car auto jobs out of the country. Something called globalization, where you globalize capital, but don't globalize workers' rights and women's rights and children's rights. And therefore, we must, in fact, fight to organize workers wherever jobs are in the world today. Yes, I work with unions even now because I'm convinced that workers must have a place at the table. Today, we see minimum wage frozen for 10 years. While the corporate greedy are taking golden parachutes and flying away. There must be some closing of the gap between the very wealthy and the surplus and the working poor who are sinking. It is astonishing to me that today we have the very wealthy getting tax cuts and then incentives to leave the country and then reinvest once they have left. They're getting compounded gifts while we're losing jobs and losing benefits. That's why workers must fight back at the polls and go to the streets in big numbers and make their presence felt at the polls in November. Workers must not surrender.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Reverend. Our next audience member is Rusty, 1212. Rusty, can you please come to the mic, give us your name, where you're calling from, and a very brief question for Reverend Jesse Jackson.
Thank you so much. My name is Mo, and I'm from Minnesota. Reverend, thank you so much for coming with us today. God bless you. Nothing but the best for you and your family. Really quickly, I want you to know that ever since 9/11, have you felt that in the African-American community, there's been less amount of racism towards African-Americans? Do you feel as if the Muslim community, the Arab community, have quote-unquote taken the load on quote-unquote hatred? And what is your stance on the N-word? Recently, people in the African-American community have been using that word quite often for the past decade or so, at least. And it's created some sort of confusion because, you know, many people don't know if it's, you know, okay to use it with African-Americans, etc. You know, the N, you know, is it okay with an A? Is it okay with an R? I just wanted to know what you feel about that. Do you think that the word should be eliminated in its entirety, etc.? Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
No people with a sense of dignity and self-respect will use self-degradation as a form of fun and put it in the public domain to be laughed at or to make money from it. Women must not be called derogatory names, no matter how loud the sitting audience may laugh. A given race must not self-degrade as a kind of go along. It is not funny to be degraded, and it's even worse to self-degrade and to self-destruct. And so I would hope people would know that Mr. and Mrs. and words appropriate to a given group be honored. And that's that part. I would like to think on your very first point, and I would like for us to know that when we fight back together, we tend to win.
Thank you, and amen to your response to our friend Rusty. Our next audience member is Callie Dano. Callie, could you please come to the mic, give us your name, where you're calling from, And a brief question for Reverend Jackson.
Good evening. I'm Callie Dano.
Good evening.
I'm representing Jackson.
Callie Dano.
Yes. Hey, briefly, I wanted to ask Jesse Jackson, thank you for letting me hear you live, man. This is an honor. In 1984, you mounted a nationwide campaign for the President of the United States position. In 1988, you did the same thing. However, there always seemed to have some kind of controversy come up to kind of stunt. To make it, to boil it down, I just want to know, do you plan on running for President of the United States at any time again? Thank you. West Side?
You know, I do not plan to run again, but you never say never. It is, in the end, it's one's will to serve. I really ran to open up doors, to remove artificial barriers, to inspire people to get involved in the process. And we really could have won if those we were running for had believed in themselves. And so I would think that we must always remain open to serve. I'm convinced that if I were to run again, it would be, however, opening up third lines on ballots around the country. I see too often now one party with two names. And if you change parties and don't change directions, you have not really changed much. If the elephant's going over a cliff and you say, no, that's not right, and you jump on the duck and it's going across the cliff, you're not any better off. You need somebody going in another direction. That's why the Rainbow Push Convention, we're going to unveil a budget, a Congressional Black Caucus budget, that takes back these huge tax cuts for the very wealthy, that begins to shift away from this to pursue such awesome military violence, invest more in education on the front side rather than jails on the back side, have a balanced budget in 5 years. We must begin to look at an alternative direction. I am also convinced that our conference, we intend to unveil a plan. Every state has a threshold for the number of votes that you need, signatures you need to get on the ballot. And I'm convinced that to do that, issues like minimum wage, which hasn't been raised in 10 years, or smaller classroom sizes, equal funding for public education, or comprehensive health care, those must be run as single issues that people vote up or down. You far against equal power to public education. To depend upon either party to do that is going to get lost in the muddy creek. I would say, let's open up the process. And if I were to run, it would be to open up the process. I think that it would make the whole lot better by knowing that people, in fact, have an alternative. And I'm not, many people don't vote because they feel they have no choice. We can create new choices.
Well, I'll tell you, you'd have my vote, Reverend. The next question is going to be from Peace Lover. Peace Lover is the producer of The People Speak. And Peace Lover, will you come to the mic? And he has a question for you, Reverend.
Reverend Jackson, thanks for coming on the show. I always look to you as an icon of leadership in this country. Where is this country going? We're in Iraq. It sounds like we're headed for Iran. What can we do to stop this administration? I'm angry. I feel helpless. I really don't know what to do. Thank you.
You know, the country is not going toward bigger tax cuts for the few and more war. The leadership that has seized power is using the power to take us in that direction. And that's why Dr. King used to often say, to make America great is the right to fight for the right. In 2006, we can change the Congress. You change the Congress, the issue of looking at the possibility of impeachment discussions will not be off the table, for example. Right now, no matter what the president does, no matter how many laws he violates or suspends, he looks at his Republican right, House or Senate, and they simply dismiss in a challenge to his breaking laws. But we can do something about that concept. Don't you hang your harp on the willow and give up. This is the time not to cry, but organize. I think there are enough people who now know that we have lost jobs, that we have lost benefits, that most poor people are not black, they're white, female, and young. Whether white, black, or brown, hunger hurts, that most folks who are poor are not on welfare, they work every day. They get to work and they cannot afford health insurance. And between taxes going up for middle class people and $4 a gallon for gas, it's obvious it's time for change. And I would urge those who are listening, like, do not despair. Do not let cynicism trip you up. This is a time for a buoyant burst of hope. And let's vote this time with a passion and go forward by our hopes and not backwards by our fears.
Thank you. Our next question is going to come from Freak the Mighty. Freak, will you come to the mic, please? Give us your name, where you're calling from, and a brief question for Reverend Jackson.
Thank you very much. This is Freak the Mighty here. Reverend Jackson, I'm from San Francisco. Okay, I wanted to know, in the lieu of the Rodney King beating and all of the police brutality here in California, is the Rainbow Coalition doing anything, pursuing any efforts to clean up the police brutality and the chief of police and all of the situations that have to do with that? Thank you.
The answer is yes. I mean, I was there making pleas at San Quentin to give people life without parole and not just kill people, to break the cycle of killing. I know that when you have elected officials who are strong, that they tend to deter police race profiling, and that those who do race profiling and those who violate, the law must be a deterrent and not an incentive for them. So if you want to get involved, I want you who are listening tonight, we're preparing now for our 40th year since Dr. King gave us the assignment in 1966. I want you to call me or come to Chicago this week at Chicago Herald, and on our website, rainbowpush.org, www.rainbowpush.org, I wish you would either join the organization or join this convention, because if we work modular now on the theme free but not equal, hope over fear, and healing over hurt, and coalition over division, we in fact can seize the momentum and change the course of our country. We have that power if we would use it.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and good luck to you on that. It is definitely an issue in many areas of the country, and it seems to me that because of the way our country is leading, our erosion of our democratic rights, that tends to empower the police force and our civil servants. And I don't know that that's the greatest thing all the time.
Well,
go right ahead.
Hello. When the president can, in effect, suggest to phone companies that need regulation to turn over the list of people's telephone numbers, that is fascism. That is not
yes.
democracy. That is denying the protection of people's privacy rights. And now they're using jails both to deny the right to vote and for profit. South Carolina is a classic case, 35% black, prisons 85% black. They've arrested 110,000 blacks a year over the last 6 years. 34 state prisons, one state college. That's 110,000 calls to the lawyers and bailiffs and judges. And when you call from jail at $4 a minute, that money goes to the general revenue budget. The single largest industry in every state, from Maryland around to Texas, the single largest industry is the jail industrial complex for profit. We, as a nation, should be ashamed, and we deserve better. But to get better, we must fight for it.
Absolutely. Everybody get involved. You heard it right from Reverend Jesse Jackson. Our next audience member is Nomo. Nomo, could you come to the mic? Tell us where you're calling from and your first name, please, and a brief question for the Reverend Jesse Jackson of the Rainbow Push Coalition.
Reverend Jackson. And my name is Nomo. I'm calling from Detroit, Michigan. Let me first say I'm very proud of the work you did with the people of New Orleans. As I listened to the comments, there seemed to be a consistent theme of how do we fix the problem. I see it all as a part of the system of racism as it deals with the inadequacies and the disparities for black folks. What do you think is the most effective tool that we have to counter racism in America and to alleviate its impact on us as black folks, the psychological impact that I think it's having on us due to our prolonged exposure to it. Thank you.
You know the issue is not just racism. It's racism. It's classism. It is gender bias. Don't forget, most poor people are not black. They're white, they're female, they're young. Most who have not gotten a minimum wage raise in 10 years are white. People in Appalachia are cold minded, dies every 6 hours from black lung disease. And that is why we who are struggling for shared security and we're fighting for broader coverage of health care protections and education must in fact find common ground. We know that fear is a factor in division. It is totally irrational for people in, say, West Virginia who are working in coal mines without adequate security and protection to be voting for a tax cut for the very wealthy and, I suppose, voting for mine security for themselves. The racism and racial fear can make you irrational. But we must not give up on building a progressive coalition that is based upon shared interests. Why can whites and blacks and browns play so well on the football field? I mean, you choose uniform color over skin color. They're white, they're black, they're brown. Because at least on that field, the playing field is even. And the rules are public and the goals are clear. We must fight for an even playing field for all Americans. That's my mission, to fight for all of us to have an even playing field, an equal opportunity, and the chance to share security.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You know, I just have to inform you, Reverend Jackson, that we have hundreds of people literally in this room right now. Our text has just gone mad. You cannot imagine the fans that you have in this room. You cannot imagine how excited everybody is to be here. And again, we are honored to have the Reverend Jesse Jackson. I think we'll take a couple of more questions.
I can imagine they're excited if they would join the Rainbow online. We on www.
Did you hear that, folks?
I mean, you know, if those who believe in us will enable us to have the staff that we need to do the work, we can do our work. So if you really don't just admire us, follow us, and invest in us. It's just $35 a year to join. But your joining online and from around the nation will be an awesome power to enable us to do our work we must do for this summer and this fall.
And as we speak, our producer is putting the website into the room. And for those of you that are interested, please join. This is a very noble, very worthy cause. And as you can see, Reverend Jesse Jackson is on our side, on American's side. And the room, the people speak. When the people speak, we make a difference. We're going to take just a couple of more questions, Reverend Jackson, and we understand that you do have to leave. Our next question will be Legally Nobody. And Legally, will you please come to the microphone and give us a brief question and where you're calling from and your name?
Thank you. I'm Legally Nobody. I'm from Chicago, Illinois. And first, I'd like to thank Reverend Jackson for all of his efforts in promoting justice throughout his lifetime. And I have just one question. Reverend Jackson, based upon your recollection of the early agenda of the civil rights movement of the 50s and 60s, in your opinion, what could have been done differently at that time, under those circumstances, that could have positively affected the present-day reality of global injustice? And do you have any regrets? Thank you.
You know, we did at that time all that we could do, and we did it effective. In other words, we were not citizens. Citizens had the right to vote. We did not. So even without citizenship status and the bifurcation of Jim Crow, we used our resources and we boycotted in Montgomery. With the help of the 54th Supreme Court decision, we won. We won the boycott and the lawsuit. We actually won. In 1960, I went to jail trying to use the public library and couldn't go to the zoo in downtown Greenville. No policeman of color or fireman of color. And could not even apply to the University of South Carolina. My father was a veteran and a taxpayer. But against those odds, we ended Jim Crow as a matter of law. We won. We had been denied the right to vote since 1870. States' rights to vote had denied us the right to vote. We won that battle. When we fight, we almost always win. Lest we fight, we never win. What hurts me today is to be begging people, please register and vote. Please stand up and march. But when we register, vote, and march for the Chicago and Harold Washington of Dave Dinkins in New York, when we fight back, we almost always win. When we don't fight, we never win. So I say, keep on fighting and keep on organizing.
Thank you. Our next speaker is going to be Love Doctor, Love Doctor 7777. Come to the mic, please, with your question for Reverend Jackson, who you are and where you're calling from.
Yes, Bishop Francis from Brooklyn, New York, also known as Love Doctor. Reverend Jackson, thank you very much for being part of a rally for TWU. You were a very big inspiration. Right now, we face even further down the line, we face even more problems. We're asked to go to arbitration. And I don't know, what do you think that the TWU is going to be successful in going arbitration, because MTA is really trying to crush us down. ATU already voted for the contract, but we're still out there and we're still fighting. So what do you think about it? I know you know Roger Tucson. What do you think about Roger?
At our convention this coming week in Chicago, June 10th through 15th, we have Labor Day on Monday morning, Labor Breakfast, and we're honoring Roger Toussaint. We're honoring the Sego landmine disaster survivors. We're honoring the Walmart workers who are fighting for the right to organize with benefits. We're honoring Tony Hill, from Senator from Florida, and Congressman Meeks, who put together a successful third-line ballot for education and for workers' wages. And so I say we can win those battles if we fight them. What should be a great source of encouragement to us is what happened in New Orleans. People in 48 states, thousands of miles away in exile, came home. They didn't go down the street and vote. They didn't go to the firehouse. They didn't go to the local church. They came by bus, by caravan, by plane, because they saw the kind of value that Mandela attached to a vote, 27 years in jail, the kind of value that Mandela was attached to it and got killed trying to get it. Black New Orleans in the main and poor people saw the value of their vote, and they kept their city against all the odds of the parties, the pundits, and the politicians. With that spirit, we can win any battle. We have the numbers if we have the will to fight.
Amen. Again, when the people speak, we make a difference.
Indeed.
That's the answer. This is going to be our last question, and only out of great honor for the speaker. Walks the Desert, you're the last question for Reverend Jesse Jackson before we make our closing comments. And your name and where you're calling from, Walks.
Well, thank you, Bishop. And thank you, Reverend Jackson, for taking time to speak to us. I feel honored. My name's Steve, and I'm from Santa Fe, New Mexico. And you're well thought of in this city, by all means. My question would be in ending, I guess, Reverend Jackson, and I believe you've answered it, but we need to become more involved. You're an example of that, a prime example of that. Your great service to this nation has shown that. And we need to vote. But if you were in power today, Reverend, what would be the first change that you would make? And thank you again, sir, for honoring us with speaking to us.
The first change would be to end the disastrous war in Iraq. We were losing so much, so many lives and money and honor, and becoming isolated in the world, losing our moral authority and our credibility. We cannot remain a global power in isolation. We are a great, blessed nation, but we're just 6% of the world's population. Most people in the world today are yellow, are brown, are black, are poor, non-Christian, young, female, and don't speak English. In that world, we must be. We can be a leader. We cannot be an occupier. I would move real fast to end that, when bringing allies who could trust us to help us end it. Because we went in there with a false coalition, but we cannot come out We need leadership for other nations to rally and support us in the process. Secondly, these huge tax cuts to the very wealthy must stop. There must now be a reinvestment in education. Strong minds break strong change. If we begin to see the value in rebuilding cities and giving our youth building trade skills and computer trade skills, those young folks who are now restless and jailed could be full of hope and with skills could begin to build and heal and not just kill and self-destruct. I think thirdly, I would call upon all Americans to have a sense of spirituality, a sense that we're not cogs in some wheel, that we are entities with some heavenly connection, that we do matter. Everybody is precious, that we are all people. We should not despise based upon religion, a race, a gender. And in that sense, we find ourselves with a kind of faith that cannot be daunted. I would say, as human beings, we fall down sometimes. We've got to get up again and again and again, because the ground is no place for a champion. That's the spirituality that excites me. The ground is no place for a champion, and nothing is too hard for God.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this has been an incredible evening with Reverend Jesse Jackson as our guest today. Reverend Jackson, we from the People Speak are so honored and have been absolutely enthralled by your answers. Not only have you given us answers, but you've given us actions. You've given us tools in order that we can proceed in our struggle, I think, at this point.
Well, let me say, this week at this convention, Governor Bill Richardson is coming from New Mexico, Mayor Vera Gosar from L.A., Mayor Kilpatrick from Detroit is coming, Congressman John Conyers. We're mobilizing our allies around the nation. Lester Kagan, who have organized peace and justice marches, and Miss Sheehan will be here, will be honored at Women's Luncheon. Maxine Waters, it's going to be a great gathering. Those who can, meet us this week, June 10th through 15th at the Hyatt Chicago, O'Hara Hyatt House, Chicago O'Hara Hyatt. But even if you can't make it, we need your support. On our website right now, you can follow us on stream all this week. We'll be streaming the conference. Call us at 773-FREEDOM on any given day. For those who are listening, if you would just pick up the line right now and join PUSH, you would give us the power to thrust forward this radiant hope that we have within our hearts and within our work.
Well, you heard it, folks. They're going to be streaming it. And anybody that's in the Chicago or surrounding areas, please attend. Again, we'll be posting the website for the Coalition PUSH coalition. Again, for those of you that wish to join, I'd like to thank the Reverend Jesse Jackson. Next week, our guest is going to be a wonderfully talented woman by the name of, she's a Native American musician and a Grammy Award winner, Mary Youngblood. That is going to be really a very interesting and a lot of fun. I would personally like to ask Reverend Jackson to perhaps celebrate Christmas this year in Bethlehem, since it is in such dire straits. That is coming from my Palestinian American side, Reverend Jackson.
Indeed.
Thank you, sir. And again, thank you very much. We are going to be giving some PSAs right now, some public service announcements, because we wanted to hold back and allow as many of our audience to ask questions. Thank you very much, Reverend Jackson. And if you will just bear with us for just a couple of minutes, I'd like to talk to you after the announcements and the close of the show.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Are you appalled that our country is spending billions on war while cutting funds for our libraries, hospitals, and schools? Are you heartsick at the suffering of the Iraqi people? Then join me, Medea Benjamin, in signing Code Pink's urgent call for peace in Iraq. Sign on today at www.womensaynotowar.org.
Got questions? The library has got answers, and books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. library, find the right answer, and a whole lot
find
more
the right answer
in your library.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the city's wall, by the relief of the bell, cast on a big ball. And they stood there hungry, stood there wondering, this land was made for you and me.
That's what I was talking about.